Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 38, A Winter's Gift with Erica O'Reilly. I'm so glad to welcome Erica back to the show. You know her as our storyteller in residence for this past year. Erica is an Irish-Canadian storyteller, spiritual counselor, and ordained minister whose work is rooted in the transformative power of story. Supported by the ancestral Irish traditions of the Mná Fossa, the wise women, the Mná Glúna, the soul midwives, and the Mná Leas, the medicine women, as well as the Ace Dana, the people of the arts, she believes deeply in facilitating experiences where souls feel heard, seen, and held. She lives in the unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg Nation. She's also the creative visionary and founder of the Into the Circle Theater. There, Erica weaves Irish culture, folklore, and mythology into contemporary storytelling that honors feminine wisdom as well as ancestral memory. During our conversation, you'll hear a lot about her creative endeavors over the last year, including her gorgeous newsletter and its accompanying podcast, Into the Circle with Erica O'Reilly, which you can find over on Substack. The link for that and all of her work will be included in the show notes. Erica is also an alum of The Author's Knot, that intimate 10-month online writing program that I started last year. This is the place where thought leaders, memoirists, novelists, and heart-led visionaries get together to work on that book or that other big project that wants to be birthed in the year to come. Erica and I spend some time talking about the process of sharing your work with others and what it's like to be in such an intimate container over the course of a year. And if you yourself are interested in having that sort of support and community to help you truly prioritize your work and commit to it, as well as have the compassionate support on how to improve your craft, then I would love for you to consider joining us in the new year. I'm running 2 small groups this coming year, and space is definitely limited. So if you're interested, I invite you to act soon. You can find all of the details over on my website, marisagowdy.com. The Author's Knot is the space where you can learn to strengthen your voice, clarify your message, deepen your craft, and truly commit to your creative work, all in service to bringing the fullness of your vision to life. Whether that's a book, or in the case of Erica, a gorgeous galaxy of creative endeavors, from oral storytelling to the written word to deep, heart-opening work that perhaps doesn't even have a name yet. Again, you can find all the details about The Author's Knot at marisagowdy.com. Without further ado, let's get to this week's story. I am so excited to welcome Erica back to the show. I've rather lost count of how many times we've had this brilliant woman, brilliant storyteller come to us on the show, but it is an abundance. And I am just so grateful to have our very last story of 2025 be with Erica. So as is our way on the show, we will first ask the story to speak for itself, and then we will explore together all of its resonances. So Erica, Fáilte, welcome back. Tell us a story, would you?
Today, I bring to you a story inspired by a wee soul who, at the beginning of Samhain, asked if I knew a story of An Cailleach, one that was maybe a little less scary. I loved this question and explained to them that while I didn't know one right now, I would ask for one. I then placed our question into the hands of the sacredly held other world, trusting that if it was meant to be so, one would land. At the same time, I am still human, so as days passed and I hadn't received anything yet, I did wonder, how might the presence of Ankalyev shift or change when interacting with the delicate nature of a young child? And then, one Saturday morning, not so long ago, as I swept my apartment, she gifted me this story in a series of images, reminding me that just as she imbues a mighty, fierce, and unwavering presence, one that can grip the landscape of Ireland, kissed by the coattails of her cold winter winds, she is also a grandmother spirit, one who can hold space for our tender human hearts, especially when times may feel too heavy or too dark. So with that, Rahamash et Horus Leheli, let's take a journey together. Lately, sleep had been hard to come by for the little boy. He had grown so used to his mother's voice singing him into the dream time that without her, his nights felt restless. For you see, the little boy and his mother shared a special connection, both viewing the magic of the world through wonder-filled eyes. And they needn't look much further than their front door. For living amongst the majestic hills in the kingdom of Kerry meant the mysticism of Erin was felt all around. When the little boy wasn't at school, in the time before his mother fell ill, their days would be filled with adventures, following the familiar path to the top of the tallest hill in County Kerry. While gathering wildflowers and inspiration, the little boy's mother loved sharing stories of the wise and wild Ankalyev, said to roam those very hills. She said that even when the presence of Brigid, Anya, or Lou were felt amongst the warmer months, the presence of Ankalyev was always here. His mother described Shanwahar Nefa, the sacred grandmother of Ireland, as sturdy and fierce. And she said Ankalyev was a dependable presence that could walk you through any challenging moment in your life. And that, while you may not always see her, you could always count on her return with the winter winds. Days and months would pass, and even though the little boy's mother was no longer physically with him, the magic spark of her presence was felt everywhere he looked. While he could no longer hear her voice or see her face, her otherworldly paintings still adorned every corner of their cottage. Even now, no easel had been moved, nor paintbrush was out of place. Now, the little boy was not all on his own. His father was doing the best he could to carry the weight of the household and child rearing, but he wasn't always there. For he too was struggling to navigate his grieving. Yet, as December circled round once more, and the first Christmas without his mother drew closer, the little boy began to worry, as not a single snowflake had fallen. Where was Ankalyev? He wondered. When winter break finally arrived, as soon as the sun would rise and his father was off to work, the little boy would spend his days following the familiar path to the top of the tallest hill in Kerry. He walked and he prayed, hoping to find Ankalyev, because this time of year wasn't the same without his mother, and that maybe finding the dream time on these long, dark December nights would be easier while tucked beneath blankets of winter snow. By the end of the ninth day, as he perched himself on the stone fence that stood by his family's home for generations, even a moonlit sky adorned with twinkling stars couldn't lift the heaviness that had descended upon the little boy's heart. Tears tumbled down his soft, round cheeks, for it was Christmas Eve, but he never found Don Kailiach. And now, even the top of the tallest hill in Kerry was without snow. And as that thought danced through his mind, the call of the crows broke through the silence of the night, followed by a gentle voice. "Dear boy, why do you carry such a heavy heart tonight?" As the little boy looked up, a bone-chilling wind swept through the valley as his eyes fell upon an old woman standing before him. She was bundled in layers of heavy wools, the hood of her mantle holding tidal waves of wintered white hair at bay, hair that curled in such a way, revealing only the edges of a kind smile and a single shimmering blue eye framed beneath deep lines of time. Though her body appeared bent and bowed, she stood steady with the help of a tall staff that rose high above her, trimmed with carved markings and swirling knots. And as she drew closer, the little boy watched as frost kissed the ground with her every step. When she settled on the stone fence beside the little boy, the crows fell silent, and all was still in the kingdom of Kerry once more. Though her presence was startling, the little boy wasn't afraid. Something about the old woman was comforting, and he was grateful to be in good company this evening, rather than on his own. "I miss my mother," he said. "This is our first Christmas without her, and my only wish is for a winter's snow. I'd hoped to find Aunt Kailiach to share this with her, and that maybe she'd be able to take my winter's wish to my mother in heaven." "Dear boy, I feel the weight of all that you carry. And I can promise you that even though you may no longer see her, your mother hears your every word and journeys with you at your every step, especially when you follow the familiar path to the top of the tallest hill in Kerry," said the old woman with a wink and a nod. How did she know of their walks? Thought the little boy in awe. "You know what I like to do sometimes when things feel heavy for me?" offered the old woman. "What's that?" replied the little boy. "Well, when I'm feeling alone, I look to the world around me, and I see the land and the animals, the birds and the trees, the stones and the sea. And I feel less alone because they keep me company. And when I'm feeling sad, perhaps missing someone who's no longer here with me, I look to the moon and the stars, because I like to imagine the glowing lights of Beleg na Bófinna as open windows looking down from the heavens, ones where our ancestors and past loved ones can check in on us from above." "I like that," said the little boy. And as he looked up to the sky on that cold Christmas Eve night, he imagined the stars as windows into the heavens, and then quietly placed a prayer in the ethers for his mother, sharing how much he loved and missed her, and explaining that he didn't need any presents this year, but rather a sign from her in heaven that Aunt Kailiach was near. In this quiet moment of reverence, the little boy hadn't noticed the old woman tapping her tall wooden staff 3 times on his family's stone fence before disappearing into the night. When the little boy went to thank the old woman, he noticed she was nowhere to be found. But it had started to snow. A giant smile filled the little boy's face. He twirled in delight with his arms outstretched, for his mother had heard his prayers. With a heart so filled with joy, the little boy ran as fast as his legs could carry him, every step leaving an imprint in the fresh fallen snow, deeper than the one before. When he neared his family's home, his father swung open the front door, relief washing over his tired face at the sight of his son. When within arm's reach, the father scooped up his little boy. Navigating life without his wife was already difficult, but to do so without his son, the greatest gift she'd ever given him, would have been unimaginable. In this quiet moment, as the snow fell around them, the father held his son a little bit longer and a little bit tighter than ever before. "There's something inside for you," whispered the father. "For me?" said the little boy. His father was not one to cry, but the little boy noticed tears glistening in the grown man's eyes as his father nodded his head yes. So, crossing the threshold into their home together, the little boy then saw a square present wrapped in silvery blue paper and sprinkled with snowflakes waiting at his dinner seat. Slowly walking over to his chair, the little boy carefully lifted the gift and gently placed it on the kitchen table. He hesitated to open the beautifully wrapped present as he tenderly traced silvery snowflakes with the tip of his finger. "It's okay, son. Take your time, whenever you're ready." With his father's blessing, the little boy delicately lifted the triangular edges of the gift wrapping and softly placed a single sheet of blue and silver paper on the floor beside him. Recognizing the face gazing back at him, the little boy began to cry once more. In his hands, he held his mother's final painting, a snow-covered scene of a wise old woman perched upon their family's stone fence. She was bundled in layers of winter wools, with the hood of her mantle holding tidal waves of wintered white hair at bay. The little boy also noticed how her hair curled in such a wave, revealing only the edges of a kind smile and a single shimmering blue eye framed beneath deep lines of time. He recognized how her body appeared bent and bowed, but that she stood steady with the help of a tall wooden staff that rose high above her, trimmed with carved markings and swirling knots. And he even noticed how frost adorned the meeting place of the earth and the old woman's feet. It was the same old woman he had spoken with only moments ago. How could his mother have known? He wondered. Slowly, the little boy looked to the back of the canvas, where a message was left in his mother's handwriting that read, "Ankailiach, a winter's gift for my son. May you know that even when you can't see us, you are never walking alone. Eternally, all my love, Mom." That Christmas evening, the snow fell in record levels over the kingdom of Kerry. And as the little boy drifted into his dreams, he could have sworn the winter wind carried his mother's song softly down from the heavens, a final gift just for him.
Kashankliyamui, 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 Kashankliyamui,
Shodzaru Argusha, a foil. That brings us to the end of our journey for now.
Oh, there's that phrase, you know, a story is an instant classic. And that's something of a modern marketing term. But what I think it really means at its core is the way that what this story does is weaves together images and ideas and yearning and pain that feels at once so familiar, and then offers it to us through a slightly different prism. And I just love the way this time of year enables us to tell stories like this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And it hits hard. Like, this is a story of loss, of grief, of pain, of loneliness, of wandering that hill with your most beloved and then wandering alone, mm-hmm. and then not being alone. I mean, it takes us through the entire course of the human journey, which at once in some ways it's so deeply remarkable, but hard to remark upon it because it's just saying, well, such is the most difficult and beautiful parts of being human.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for putting it in story form. And giving her gorgeous white hair and a single blue eye and so much blessed snow.
Of course.
So I'd love to start maybe with the hardest question of what is the experience of telling this story for you? How does it feel as it comes through you?
This story is one that has offered me the invitation on an even deeper level that stories that arrive to be told are just as much medicine for the teller as they are for the people who receive them.
Yeah.
And how the stories can have a deeply personal connection. And I feel that the beauty of myth, the beauty of folklore, is that they can be incredible supports for navigating our personal experiences. Because when I asked the question, because I didn't have this idea for the story.
Yeah.
And it was just this wonderful, sweet soul who asked me a question, like I said, and I was like, that's a really good question. I would love to know that story that, you know, that many of the stories that I tell of her, she's that rooted, unwavering, sturdy presence, that wise grandmother that keeps the family, keeps the young ones in line.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there was something about an image of how would she connect with a young, tender soul? And just holding that question, and then one day the story literally just arriving in images and going, oh, this is what the story is about, and knowing how deeply it's connected to my own story of having lost my mother and how challenging that first Christmas truly was.
Mm-hmm.
And with time and a few more years under my belt, so to speak, or a few more roads having walked, I can receive stories like this. The gift that they are.
Yeah.
and just trust that not only is it being called into the world, but it also has something for me in the moment. And you've heard this story before. I'd shared it in our community, and there were those moments where the personal came flooding forward and you could hear it in my voice. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that it isn't here on like a share like today.
Yeah.
Our emotions show up in unpredictable ways, especially when navigating grief. Mm-hmm. So I feel this story in particular has not only brought me back to the story is medicine for the teller, mm-hmm. but also reminding me of how grace and grief can be so closely intertwined, and how a time of year like December can be the beauty and the heaviness, but that there's still magic. And if we're open to feeling support, it is there. It's there.
Yeah. Yes. Because I think there's no other time of year where it's so clear that this has come before. Right. I think just secularly and just culturally at this point, we're so aware of the rituals that surround Christmas time, the solstice, Hanukkah, whatever we're celebrating. Like, we're so aware of the sense of it's coming round again, right? And being greeted again, which of course we know as cyclical beings that it's always true. But then that just makes it so much more real, the way in which the presence of an absence of she who was supposed to be here at the table, because of course you and I always sit together as motherless daughters, as well-loved daughters who still are well-loved and still feel that and are also always so aware of the absence of them. And it's at this time of year where we are called to be most joyful and most brave at the same time, because especially when it gets passed on to those who were not accustomed to having to hold space for the revelries or be the one who was the sort of the cauldron from which the Christmas plenty sprung forth. Uh-huh. And that's something I know I'm deeply aware of right now, but it's in the boy's father. It's in the kayak herself. Like he has, as he, the little boy had support coming from both sides of the veil, uh-huh. and it took them all in order to conjure up mother love.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm.
Yeah. And something else you say in there too is the way in which life makes us ready to receive a story when it wants to find us. Isn't that an impossible, wonderful gift? Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's now who I am today. I am so grateful for how I intuit or how I receive stories, because I know it's not necessarily quote the norm, but genuinely seeing the other world through my otherworldly eye, you know, that place of wisdom, that inner sight. And sometimes they show up when you're sweeping your kitchen floor and you're like, you're not ready for it. You're not sitting in meditation, expecting for it to land, prepared for the emotions that might come through with it. But in being in those moments where on a soul level, there's an attunement that the body and soul know that it's okay or prepared to receive, and then they land. And I knew that with this story in particular, it landed in such a way, and I was like, I have to write the images down so I don't lose the story. And I think it solidified for me that it's not always a writing and storytelling isn't a predominantly cerebral, like logical process. It is very intuitive. Yeah. And it landed when I wrote it out. I was like, oh, I could feel it in my body. But then when my partner came home and I said, the story arrived, and I started to talk through it with him, that's when it opened my heart. And then the grief started to move. And I went, oh, okay. Okay. And I view it as that is part of my own journey in surrendering and leaning into trusting my own gifts and how I navigate the world, even though it might not seem like the norm in my core family, or, you know, I go to circles of women who intuit and move through the world similarly, to feel less alone in a process that sometimes can be like, what?
Yeah. Well, I love that you mentioned that because it seems it's so perfect. So we're just wrapping up our year of the Author's Knot community, which is where you mentioned you had shared this story with us a few weeks ago. And it was such a joy to receive it. And I might have even been the same evening. Another member asked about everybody's process in terms of how, you know, just because it's always like, how are we coming back to showing up to the world, to the world as a writer, but to our own work? And it was just it was a kind of a beautiful ending question for us after having spent 10 months together. And the group had a spectrum of answers all across the path. But what I'm so aware of right now is you just named for us at least four, if not more, steps in terms of how to make yourself ready and court and then record a story. You know, from getting that initial question from the little one who was kind of the catalyst and the spark, and then walking around with it for a while. And then, of course, a story that Kalyat came through while you were sweeping the floor. I mean, you were engaging your witch's broom. And I mean, even as you named in this story, like, she's the hill walker, right? Like we set the crone beside the fire, you know, tending the hearth sort of thing. And I think there's something to be said for that, especially in terms of what we understand of human aging. But the Kalyak herself, like, she was on the move. She would have the broom in hand. And then as you named that, you sat down and the words started to flow, you were courting the images, doing that work that probably looked the most like you were a writer. Mm-hmm. But then it was only that first chance to share with your partner where it's like, hey, I started to write this thing and, oh, this is what this really means. Oh, and then I'm sure you went back to another round of crafting and really being with it. And then as you named, telling it to us the first time where it was more raw. It was still beautiful and it was ready for an audience, but it still had that spark of newness, I guess, mm-hmm. like the fresh snow that no one has stepped in yet. Mm-hmm. And then what you've offered us today is a little bit of that. Maybe it's the shoveled path that says, hey, we have all of this here, but I know which way I'm walking because I've done this before. Will you come with me? Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what do you do after a story like this is out in the world? You and I have talked a fair bit about the power of repetition with stories and how we're trying to kind of call that art back in. But where do you, and I'm all, because I often sit with this question myself. Once you've told a story, maybe once or twice, it has its season. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're recording this on December 12th. We've still got a good stretch of time between us and solstice and Christmas. Mm-hmm. How will you carry this story with you for a while, do you think? Do you have a sense?
It definitely feels like it will be a story that will be very present for me through the rest of Samhain season into Imbolc. Mm. And for me, the stories, when they found their way onto the page and then found their way through my voice, they feel like little treasures, like little tinctures of medicine or balms that are there for me to lean into, but also they'll be called forward when an opportunity arises, whether it's retelling it in, you know, a live storytelling gathering, whether it's, you know, re-releasing it in my own podcast whether it's like a seasonal release, or I think it always comes back to me just trusting the spirit of the stories, because they never feel like mine, like I own them. It's they're a part of me. And when they're called forward, I'll know. And I think that's the beauty of it. And that's often how stories stay with me after having a beautiful bundle of, you know, healing stones, or like I said, little tinctures or little blue bottles kind of ready.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be seasonal medicine or specific intentions of gatherings, they're always there. They're always there.
And that feels like a specific art that has to get practiced, and if not perfected, but just something you have to be consciously engaged with as years go by of starting to build up your own, you know, storyteller's archive in terms of how those relationships get tended. Because I know I'm becoming more and more aware of that. It's like, you know, especially when we're public creatives and we're offering things out into the world, there's a whole beautiful constellation of people that we're trying to stay connected to, who we know that they've been touched by a story, and we don't know all the ways they may carry our own words with them. But then there's also that sense of how we stay in relationship with the stories that we've told. And again, as you say, without that sense of ownership necessarily, but in a way, like we're there, whether we're their midwives or wherever it is that we could name ourselves as part of the vessels that brought them through, it's an interesting bit of work to stay in relationship and to breathe life into them and to know we're going to forget some of them every now and again. They're going to come up and surprise us perhaps. But I'm just curious how you hold that and what you're learning, you know, as you mentioned, the years that come, you know, under your belt or over time. What are you learning of that?
When you use the word relationship, that resonates on like a physical core level of, it's very much in reflection of how at least I move through the human experience of dancing between ordinary physical reality and the realm of spirit, where I found myself saying the stories are always in the wings. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're always present with me as I lean into my theater nerd, my theater background. Like they're always there. Some of them are present and they haven't landed on the page yet. Maybe it's because there's a particular season in nature that will help it land more softly. And then there's ones such as this story that feels very much resonance to having relationship to winter in particular. So maybe she'll come in and out in different ways in winter seasons to come in the future. And then there's stories that have such a presence that they land and I can feel when they're circling back around. I can feel Sheila in the wings.
Yeah.
And Sheila's like just waiting for her time, you know, for in bulk and spring to come around so that she can land once more. So while they might not always be told, the relationship for me as an artist and a teller, and one that is so grateful for and in reverence to my connection to the other world of spirit is. And it's so interesting that this is landing now, but for me to articulate, I don't always have to be doing to tend to the relationship. That it doesn't always have to be an action forward, or especially in today's day and age of recording and content out, but more being grateful of the stories that have landed of the great mothers who are very much in the wings with me. And then being open to the process of as they arise.
And that sense of remembering that even as we create, we are held by that which we've created, right? And I think that becomes such the gift of the years of building things. But just anytime we decide to say, I had a bit of inspiration and so I put it on paper. Mm-hmm. And every time, or even, you know, I told a story out loud and I bothered to go back and repeat it and to visit, you know, like, I mean, my goodness, my neighbors now know, at least when they see me coming and they see my lips moving, they're like, is she on the phone or is she practicing a story? And it's great because the local dog walkers now understand, there goes Marisa talking to herself. She's, you know, there it is. But we create a container for ourselves even as we put words down, right? And they start to hold us and it becomes this sort of gorgeous relationship. And I think it is both with the, you know, if it's sentence after sentence and page after page and chapter after chapter, say if you're writing a book, but it's also in terms of as we write characters into being, especially those with mythic roots, like as you give the Kalyak her specific look in this story, her specific way of her one eye, you know, one single blue gazing eye and her staff, I could feel the way as she emerged for you, as you described her more fully, it just kept strengthening and strengthening until the two of you were just absolutely walking beside each other and walking that little boy home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Kalyak for me is one, I think about it now, she wasn't the first story I heard. I think the very first Irish story I heard was the tale of Mish. Again, very much in alignment with, went shortly after my mom passed, probably within a couple of weeks, I found a telling online of her story. But there was something about Nkailiach who arrived shortly after in my awareness of when I was in my early days of asking the question of the stories of my bones and them arriving. Mm. When she arrived, it was very much that sturdy presence of when you're in those early days, weeks, months, years of grief, and how that can, it can just over, it overwhelms the body and spirit in different ways for different people. But for me, she became that, those steady bones for me to lean into, that I could navigate through my grief and then have beautiful stories of her arrive in different ways. So it was telling when I was like, how do I now put words to what I feel or what I see? Mm-hmm. That sometimes is the challenging part for me. Because I'm like, I can feel it. And if only people could see through my eyes, you know, the, so that's why I'm, that's more of the cerebral process for me, the actual writing of the words to create the images and hope I'm honoring how the story has shown up. And at the same time, I feel that's why I've really leaned into sharing stories in like a podcast format and playing with sound design.
Yeah.
To really allow the story to hold, envelop, immerse someone into it, so then they can have their own experience to attuning to Nkailiach or the little boy. I think that's a very magical aspect of myth work and walking between the worlds of stories of the past and our stories today.
Well, you've mentioned your podcast briefly, and we did, of course, not mention it at the top of the show, but why don't you just talk about us, with us a little more about sort of your creative development over this last year has really been so, I mean, you've been such a fascinating combination to me as getting a chance to watch you work, right? Because you are a performer, you're an oral storyteller who puts together these gorgeous, elaborate shows of yourself telling these tales. And also you've been showing up on the page. I mean, it's with the devotion of the newsletter writer of the Substacker who's showing up and saying, here, I have this for you. Mm-hmm. And yet most recently, you've kind of been emerging yourself as your own podcaster and offering these stories in a form that feels so divinely inevitable. And yet obviously it was just time for this idea to come.
In terms of even just looking back, because we started in, Authors Not started in February. So in 10 months, there has been such a shift within me in the sense of feeling more deeply rooted in my body, in my spirit, in my dawn, you know, my soul purpose, but that it has been a process. And Maybe part of the thing is I've never really thought of Substack as newsletters. I've always just approached it as, oh, I'm just going to put some of my creative musings or wonderings or pieces on the page, at least for that first year, to share some of my experience as a creative or spirits of stories as they show up in little bits and pieces. But I've never approached it as like a newsletter. And then this year, as time went on, because the Authors Not held space for the larger, like full length live performance that I'm working on for 2027. But then these smaller stories arrived along the way. And it has been a beautiful, kind of tender, I don't know what you know when you have a necklace kind of all knotted up from the back of your drawer and you just kind of have to tenderly tend to the pieces to unwind it. That's what it's felt like, where the container of the Authors Not invited consistency to the best of my ability, like having to show up on the page some shape or form or having something ready to share for the group. So it was accountability, but then I was using my voice even more. And that was a key point for me, especially as an oral storyteller, is being able to show up. Maybe some pieces were polished, maybe some pieces were very raw, but trusting that relationship with the story as well as my own voice was key. And as that shifted And I remember you and I having a conversation where early on in Substack, when I realized you could include like the voiceover to follow the piece, I've been recording my voice since the very beginning because it felt very important to me that it be my voice, that if somebody wanted to hear it, it would not be a computer generated voice. It'd be the voice of the teller who's writing the piece in front of you or that you're experiencing. So come, I returned from a beautiful experience in County Kerry this summer. Mm-hmm. And we had had a conversation and kind of navigating how do I show up in the world or show up virtually in the way I'm being called currently in a way that's most in alignment. And I remember thinking, wait, if I'm already recording these pieces that I'm writing, why wouldn't I then play with just allowing the stories to have their own space? Mm-hmm. And this opportunity to share stories through not work reminded me, or kind of again, leaned into that theater design, theater nerd of playing with sound. Mm-hmm. So if I know I'm putting something out through the wonderful ethers of the internet, it opens a whole new sense of offering stories that can be even more immersive if I'm open mm-hmm. to playing. And as soon as that opportunity for play came in, I'm like, oh, if I don't have a show to put on in front of you right now, I can create a beautiful sacred space to hold the spirits of these stories. And hopefully mm-hmm. when somebody tunes in, that experience of the spirit of the story is there, because I think there's an element of more aliveness and spirit when you have the soundscapes of just stories recorded, and it leaves more room for play and trusting the spirit of the story to do their work for whomever's listening.
Oh, you know, we never know what we're gonna explore when you and I sit down together. We know the story and we never know where the conversation's gonna go, but I'm just so grateful to be able to sit down with you. And because you are such a multidimensional creative being who comes to your own sacred storytelling work from so many different angles. And in the process, I mean, because in the conversations you and I have had over the years, we know that it's always about the everything of, you know, the deep spiritual transmission that comes through when someone says, you must tell my story, when they kind of tug at our cloaks and say, you have to do it too, all the way up to and including like, so Substack as a newsletter and podcasting platform is also part of who we are in our modern creative lives, because it starts to become all these interweavings of, you know, whether the medium is the message and when it's bigger than the medium and when it's just these different ways of saying, oh, I've seen all of these different creative possibilities arrayed before me, but now I'm seeing them through, what if I offer it with this combination mm-hmm. of, you know, which buttons I'm pressing, but also in terms of which intentions I'm offering up as I give forth this story, this way of looking at this particular season. I mean, even to the conversations you and I have had about, oh, okay, well, some of your stories are going to be released in two different places, mm-hmm. your podcast and mine. And it becomes instead this kind of sense of like, yes, please more. Like it's in, you think about it, you're creating a beautiful tapestry and you've got the threads going in two different directions. I don't know which is the warp and which is the weft, but what are you going to say? Oh no, I already have blue in the warp. I couldn't possibly have it in the weft. Like we need to have them in these different forms, approaches, vessels in order to greet people, but also in order to honor the stories themselves, because they are bigger than a single recording, a single transmission, because they're entities unto themselves, not just a piece of content that's going to go out on X date in December.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And I think it circles back to one of your earlier questions of what happens after the story touches the page or mm-hmm. spoken into the world. And with all the complexities of modernity and the internet, I feel like it has been such a gift for me in this year. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to explore my creativity in various ways, being able to connect in community with other creatives through the vehicle of, you know, you holding space through the authors, not through Zoom, you know, and feeling mm-hmm. a connection to community. But with the stories specifically, it allows the stories to just find a place in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's again, it's out of my hands, and that it's there for somebody to experience when it's called to them. And I think having tincture-sized stories for the soul is a beautiful way to mm-hmm. honor the stories who have landed and that want to be recorded, so that if and when somebody else needs to hear them, mm-hmm. they can be found.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in contained in that too, I want to just name that sense of honoring your own integrity as a storyteller. You know, I think, and we've sort of touched on this before, but the way in which we're sort of forcing ourselves through the modern media machine to continue to produce and not giving ourselves the time that we necessarily need to linger and to repeat ourselves and to say it multiple times and to know that actually it came through with a different transmission or a different emphasis. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, this isn't necessarily to say that, you know, every rehearsal take should be released out into the world, that everyone should, you know, we should gather an audience around. Like, there is something to be said for the fact that you rehearse before you open the house and welcome people in, but not every show is for one night only. And what if it's okay that it get, not more than okay, that it is captured as an essence? And I guess that maybe that's it there too. If we trust the essence and truth of a story, and we know that the way you're telling it on this bright Friday afternoon is different than the time you told it on a cold and dark Monday evening, that those different tellings and those different times have their own transmission and will be received as they need to be, mm-hmm. because some days people will hear this story and they will be the little boy. Mm-hmm. And they will be, and other times they will be the father who just wishes he was doing a better job. Mm-hmm. Other times they will be the mother afraid for what's going to happen after she can't hold everybody together. Mm-hmm. And other times they'll be the kayak herself mm-hmm. out there walking the hills and asking the snows to fall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, Erica. Thank you so much for bringing us this story today. Are there any last thoughts, either from the images, from the story itself, or else somewhere else in your creative cauldron you'd like to leave us with?
It feels as though, as you were sharing just now, it was this image of, as an artist, as a storyteller, as an Irish-Canadian storyteller and a daughter of the Irish diaspora, a daughter of Ireland who just lives across the sea. Mm. I am so grateful today to be in the place that I am, to be able to not only feel held by the great mothers of Ireland and her landscapes and her stories, and her songs, that I guess my artistic intention moving forward, especially as we sit kind of at that threshold of a calendar new year, so to speak, my body feels very much in the new year of Samhain.
Yeah.
So to speak forward, my dawn or my artistic intention at this point is stories land with me or feel like a gift given to me. And because of how deeply related they are to the spirit and the landscape of my own bones, I couldn't imagine doing anything else other than being grateful in the moment and spending time with that spirit of the story, and then turning around and offering it to the world in service of hopefully somebody else finding a story, finding a connection with An Cailleach when it's needed most, so that they too can feel the incredible otherworldly support that is there, especially when we're tender human hearts.
Oh, thank you for that blessing on the why we write as individuals and as members of this great collective. We need these stories from all the angles. Mm-hmm. To receive them, to give them, to weave them, to receive them again, to give them again. It all just keeps just circling round and round. Mm-hmm. So, Well, it's such an honor and a pleasure to close this year with you. We will be bringing back Not Work next week with one last 2025 episode, actually in just a few days after you'll be hearing this, because this is, I think, a tradition both Erica and I have come to love, is the idea of welcoming in what's often known as the 12 days of Christmas, or perhaps the 12 days of solstice, because in some of the traditions, they begin on Christmas Day and reach through to the Epiphany. But if you start a 12-day practice on the solstice, it leads you right through to January 1st. And next week, or actually, I guess, on the 21st, I will release an episode just kind of inviting everybody to be in what I've come to call the 12 rays of solstice, to kind of collect a set of omens and portents and possibilities for the new year. So I think Erica will be sharing her own as well, so we could all play in that space of new year possibility. Because right now, Erica, you are holding, as you said, you are in a new year place already with the coming of Samhain. And I think all of us come to these practices in different ways, in different places, depending on how deep is the Samhain into the soul? You know, are we already feeling the winter of things? I know for myself, I can speak for myself to say, goodness gracious, October 31st, November 1st, that feels like a long time ago. And it feels like it's been a bit of a less of a new and more of a long, you know, rather than a new day dawning. I know I've been feeling that sense of wearing the gray cloak. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's heavy on the shoulders, and sometimes it's just the nature of the clouds in the sky. But I know I'm looking forward to a December 21st shaft of light through New Grange. Mm-hmm. But Erica, you are a shaft of light in so many ways. So thank you for being with us today and so many days throughout this year of storytelling. This is far from goodbye. We'll just see what story you come and tell next.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much. Mil buikas.
Mil buikas. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.